Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we're talking with Kevin Sheridan. He is the best-selling author, keynote speaker, and chief engagement officer out of Chicago, Illinois. Kevin, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure, David.
You know, we've talked a lot with a number of guests having to do with employee engagement. And a number of the people that we've talked to have certainly had their own perspectives, their own thoughts of, you know, what is the challenging aspects of employee engagement today? What are some of the trends? I'd like to start this interview and kind of have a discussion with you about what you see of trends of employee engagement today.
Well, I think even to this day, even though the term employee engagement has been bandied about for about 15 years, it's still largely misunderstood by both employees and even managers that are largely responsible for helping build employee engagement. So I think one immediate takeaway is actually education for all employees and managers as to what it looks like. And then I think there is a dire need for redefining engagement, and this is actually chapter two of my New York Times bestseller, Building a Magnetic Culture. In the past, the industry of consultants and measurement experts of engagement, they focused solely on two definitions of engagement, one being intent to stay, people that aren't going to resign at the drop of a hat, and the second is the likeliness that the employee will exert that extra discretionary effort, which leads to productivity. Both of those definitions are still valid, but the third definition was wholly missed by that entire industry, and that is empowering employees themselves to begin to be owners of their own engagement, as opposed to doing these annual employee opinion surveys and dropping the results in the hands of management and only expecting managers to own and be responsible for engagement. Employees themselves should accept at least half of the responsibilities for engagement. I think that's an enormous missing piece.
Do you see that organizations over the last few years have begun to look at employee engagement or even maybe the survey process in a different way? Is there something new that's starting to come down the pike, or is it really the way that that information from the surveys is now being used that looks different?
Well, I think the companies are slowly beginning to reexamine the way that they're measuring engagement. One of the most popular engagement surveys out there, particularly for really large global companies, was the survey called the Gallup Q12, which came out of a New York Times best-selling book written by Marcus Cunningham. And unfortunately, the research behind that instrument is pretty antiquated. That was about 15 years ago when that book, First Break All the Rules, came out. And there are some pretty significant holes in that measurement tool, not the least of which is it doesn't ask anything about compensation. And one of the great pillars of building a magnetic culture is making sure that you are paying your people fairly and making sure that they feel they're being paid fairly. And that's not even asked about in the Gallup Q12. The other thing that I think is still missing, but slowly organizations are awakening to examining this, is the approach to measurement has been a one-size-fits-all solution. So all of the items in the survey are strictly based upon what's known about the entire population of employees worldwide or in America or North America. And that misses a huge challenge that organizations face as it relates to diversity and inclusion. One of the biggest challenges for organizations now is generational diversity. And you hear a lot about in the press about millennials and how their expectations and value sets are different. And there are a lot of baby boomer managers out there that are pulling their hair out trying to understand the younger worker and motivate them accordingly. And what's not being done is organizations are not thinking, well, do we have the right questions in our survey that get to the heart of the key drivers for engagement for a younger population? One of the biggest is these employees want to be working at an organization that has corporate social responsibility and is giving back to the community. That's in fact the third most impactful driver of engagement. And I would say that 80% of the surveys out there are not asking a question about corporate social responsibility. And if you're a retailer, for example, you're probably reliant on that portion of the population for your workforce, and you should re-examine what you're measuring in your instrument.
You're talking about that being the third measure. And I'll get back to pay in just a second, but what are the first one and two most important to employees at this point?
Well, number one is what Dan Pink talks about in his great book, Drive, and it's recognition. And what he says, and I am in complete agreement with him, is there is a desert of thank yous out there. I spent 25 years in the employee survey business when I founded HR Solutions, and so I've been listening to employees for decades about what's driving their engagement, what's missing, and literally half the time when a work group or an organization scored low on a recognition survey item, like when employees do great work here, their work is recognized by the manager or the organization. We'll do a focus group on the heel of that question, and half the time when you ask employees who scored low on that item, they say, you know what, when we mess something up, our managers are here in a minute. When we do something right, we never hear anything. I haven't heard a thank you in years. And to me, David, that is so sad because it doesn't cost anything. And the best employers I've worked for have actually institutionalized or made the thank you part of their culture, where even managers are recording it in their Outlook calendar to thank three people each day, or to carve out an hour at the end of a Friday afternoon and reach out to their direct reports and say, hey, David, you know, I noticed you did a really great job on that project this week, and I really appreciate you. Keep up the good work. There is not enough attaboy and attagirl going on. The second most impactful driver is career development. And again, this is a big opportunity for improvement. I would give the report card to corporate America as a D-plus maybe in this area, primarily because it's not being talked about. And if you ask managers to do a self-assessment as to how they're doing on that key driver career development, ask them, have you sat down with your direct reports in the last quarter and ask them, hey, how's your career going? Where do you want to be in 3 months? Where do you want to be in 6 months? And the key question, how can I help? What a beautiful question for a manager to ask that shows they care. And it's not happening. I would say only 10%, in fact, I know this because we surveyed the management population. We asked them, how many of you have actually sat down on a quarterly basis and had the one-on-one career development discussion, and only 10% of the managers can honestly say yes to that question. Big opportunity for improvement.
Certainly, all the issues bring up are critical, whether it's drive, whether it's career development, whether it's engagement in general. So I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second, because I think that, I agree with you, but I think it's important to flesh out a couple of the issues that always get talked about when people start talking about these things. One is that an employee should be driving themselves. They should have self-motivation. They should be someone who is, driven. And if they're going to be looking for a job, they shouldn't just be somebody who sits back and relaxes and coasts along. You know, certainly we've done surveys, you've done surveys, you've looked at things that say employees that are very happy stay and employees that are very unhappy stay. Why? Because they don't usually go anywhere in that particular case, the bottom 10%. So from a drive perspective, sometimes that thank you gets taken or gets said by managers just because they feel they have to say it, not because it really is necessarily deserved. So how do you balance the two between that?
Well, this is an interesting topic because I certainly do not believe in the hypocrisy of just saying thank you to say thank you. I think, and I put this in my book, that leaders and managers need to be genuine with a capital G. They need to be what Bill George of Harvard Business School coined in his book, True North. They need to be authentic. So I never would advocate managers thanking people just to cross it off a list, especially if it's not deserved. If indeed the manager is having a difficult time thanking someone and there is a noticeable absence of things to be recognized or thanked about, then the manager should re-examine what that employee is doing in their job. Have they been reflective about their own engagement? Are they in the right fit? And I think this is a big opportunity for employees to self-examine whether they're in the right job to begin with. And Jim Collins got into this when the, are you in the right seat in the bus? If you know and you look at the engagement pie chart of how many actively engaged employees there are, how many in the massive middle category, and how many in the third nefarious actively disengaged category, the biggest challenge is the middle category. 60% of the American public is approaching their job the way that Harold the Donut Maker, I'm sure you remember,
remember
the Dunkin'
yes.
Donuts commercial with 4:30 in the morning
donuts.
And he's mumbling to himself, time to make the donuts. Yeah. Sad to say, but most Americans approach their job with that lack of vigor and that lack of passion. Smart managers, instead of just issuing a perfunctory thank you, are going to say, well, you know what? This person is in the wrong role. I need to recast them into a job that they can be passionate about and that their job skills are fully utilized. And my favorite story in this regard is a woman that was an environmental services worker at a large health system in New Orleans, Ochsner Healthcare. And she was a somewhat average employee, largely because she'd be leaning on her mop talking to people, and she was a socialite. And her manager was smart enough to say, she's in the wrong role. She was recast as a greeter. And if you walk into their flagship hospital, she, with great effusiveness and bubbliness, is greeting people with such passion. Good morning. Can I take you somewhere? And I watched this woman for a half an hour, David. She literally hugged 20% of the people that came through that front door. She got the first copy of my bestseller, and they gave it to her, signed at a service awards banquet, and she burst into tears. She deserved it. And there's not one of her coworkers at Ochsner Health System that does not know about Miss Betty and what she brings to the table.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
Established in 2009, CrossFit Casco Bay is Portland's most experienced strength training facility. CrossFit is the principal strength and conditioning program for many police academies, elite special forces, champion martial artists, housewives, children, and everything in between. At CrossFit Casco Bay, you'll be able to reduce stress, manage weight and body composition, enhance physical strength and endurance, improve flexibility, and recover from injury or illness in a safe environment. The time is now. Stop in for a free demo. For more information, please visit CrossFitCascoBay.com. CrossFit Casco Bay, forging elite fitness.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We are talking with the one, the only, Kevin Sheridan.
out of Chicago, Illinois, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and chief engagement officer. You know, I have to ask this question before we go any further with the interview. How'd you come up with the title chief engagement officer?
Well, I was I'm a serial entrepreneur, David. I've started three different companies, and the last one I ran for 17 years, and probably for nine of those years, I was the chief executive officer. And then I had the pleasure of working with some organizations that started to reexamine the old titles and the way they do things. One of my prized clients was a wonderful company called the Radio Flyer Company here in Chicago. They make the little red wagon. You probably remember pulling your sibling, or maybe you were pulled along in that wagon. And one of the things they taught me is, as their vendor, was not to take life too seriously and to to come up with something more colorful as a title. And their CEO is actually known as the CWO. He's the Chief Wagon Officer. And I guess I did a self-examination of what I'm most passionate about, and this whole topic of employee engagement is something that I will never be done learning about. And I thought, my title as CEO is not reflective about my passion. And so that's when I rebranded myself as the Chief Engagement Officer.
No, it's a great title, and certainly we've had a number of guests on the show that have some of these titles that are unique, and I think it does bring a different level of engagement to the title and to the person and to the belief in that individual and what they cover. You know, we were talking about employee engagement, and we were talking about the different challenges, the different things that need to be done in the last segment. I'd like to talk a little bit about how your book, The Magnetic Culture, talks about recruiting and retaining top employees. Talk to me a little about how you see this magnetic culture really driving a retaining of top talent, because as you know, there is a war on talent. It is starting now, and it's going to continue for the next few years with the generational shift, and I think that this is something that would be interesting to the listeners.
Well, I think the recruiting aspect of building a magnetic culture is absolutely critical, and in looking at the top 10% of organizations that were my clients that were at the summit, if you will, of employee engagement. They were best in class. They had the highest engagement levels. One of the commonalities that I saw among those special companies was that they did not, if they were going to spend the time, money, and energy building magnetic culture, they would only let magnetic people in. And the recruiting process was absolutely scrutinizing. They would be very careful about who they extended offers to, and they would set up the recruiting process as somewhat of a gauntlet, if you will, and Radio Flyer is an absolute perfect example of this. I, as a head of HR Solutions, also did the same thing. At one point in time, we had a very significant turnover, and I said to my leadership team, we're not doing what we should as we hire people, and we set up a non-negotiable list, which was very helpful, and each leadership team member said, these are the two things that I'm going to put on the list, that if we see it in the interview process, we're not going to extend an offer. My two contributions to that list is I'm not going to hire somebody that can't look me in the eye, and I'm also not going to hire someone who can't succinctly and clearly answer a question. The other acknowledgement, and this one was really an epiphany, was I saw the Society for Human Resource Management did a study about 5 or 7 years ago, and they asked all the heads of HR, what's the number one reason employees do not work out? And 43%, which is significant, of those heads of HR said they can't accept feedback. When you offer up feedback that's constructive, they fight it off and they get defensive. And so what we did and what we taught our clients to do is, knowing that reality, ask questions during the interview process that can identify whether somebody has thick enough skin and can be honest and candid and say, you know, I'm not perfect and I'm open to that feedback. And that's the story of a woman that I hired, where we had a division that was fairly, we had some quality issues and leadership issues, and I thought, we need to make the right hire here. And so what I would do during the interview process is I'd let the candidate get very comfortable, softball questions for a half an hour, and then after about a half an hour I'd ask him a zinger question, which was, David, tell me the biggest mistake you've made in your job in the last 3 years. And the comedic irony of those answers of the first nine candidates was they would either make up a mistake and blame someone else for it promptly, or they'd sit on the couch of my office, Himmen and Hahn, just cannot think of anything they've done wrong in the last 3 years. I make a mistake at least once a week in my job. I hopefully learn from it. I'm reflective about it. Meredith, who got the job, I barely had the question out of my mouth, and she laughed. She goes, we really messed this one up. And she articulated exactly what went wrong, what she did to correct it, and what measures she put in place to ensure that that mistake could never happen again. And she had the job literally right on the spot because I knew that she could be honest and candid, and she recognized she wasn't perfect and she was open to feedback.
Now, that's great. You know, in the first segment, we talked a little bit about pay, you know, a little bit about the challenges that pay bring to the workplace in terms of feeling like you're getting paid enough. Now, you and I both know I've never met anybody really that I've asked them directly and said, so, you overpaid? And I don't think I've ever got anybody ever to answer the question, yes, you should take away at least 10% of my salary. So I've never heard anybody ever say that. But pay is a factor. It's one of the lower factors. But it is a factor because you got to live and you got to make money. Bottom line. Tell me where you're seeing that going today, where, you know, pay rates have been a challenge in the last few years due to certainly the economy. Unless you're in a specific position where you're really needed, we can talk about engineers, for example. There's certainly a huge drive for engineers out there. Or even in doctors, you know, you can almost write the amount you want and you're going to get it. You know, tell me where you see that going in engagement as well as just in general from trends.
Well, this is a big issue, and one of the great advantages of using a formal survey and a vendor that has normative benchmarks or normative data. What that is, that's just a fancy way of saying they can tell you what the average score is for each of the questions in the survey. Well, one of the big advantages, if you're not using a vendor like that, you ask a question in your survey that you maybe conduct internally, you get the scores back, and let's say they were 40% of the population felt that they were fairly paid, 20% in the middle, and 40% felt that they weren't fairly paid. Most people would interpret that as a really bad score. Only 40% of their people are happy, when the reality, as much as you inferred, David, is everybody wants to make more money. So that score is going to be naturally lower. The norm on that question is actually 34%. So that 40% score is actually a very positive thing. With that said, I think that what's happened in the last 5 years with the economic malaise is that employees have been put through what I call the perfect storm of disengagement. That perfect storm looks like this. You laid my buddy off. You gave me their job responsibilities. Actually, you gave me more work to do. And I didn't see an increase. You didn't give me a salary increase. And you're chipping away at my benefits. You said that the wage rates are now frozen and bonuses are eliminated. There is a lot of angst and, in some case, anger about this compensation issue, particularly among high performers. The study we did at HR Solutions, and I know Towers Watson did one as well, that was literally within one percentage point. We asked employees, when the economy gets better, will you begin to actively look for a new job? 54% of employees in America said yes to that question. That does not portend good things as it relates to turnover, which cost the American economy $300 billion a year. I think there's a wrestling match that goes on between HR and finance, where HR wants to do the right thing. They want to be competitive because they want to fill these positions, and yet finance looks at, well, that's going to be an extra $1 million in salaries, but finance is not looking at the turnover cost and saying, well, that extra million will save us $5 million because we're not going to have people walk out the door. And by the way, 59% of all new employees leave within the first year. That is not a good report card. The last thing I'll say about pay is something I featured in my bestseller, which I think, frankly, is shameful. To think that we are in the year 2013, and we still have a massive disparity between what women make versus men doing the same job. And you know what direction that is in. Women are not being fairly paid as it relates to their job skills. That's just wrong. and it's not smart for the long haul.
You know, it's interesting. This topic is certainly one that is a big challenge, right? It's a big challenge in the marketplace today. It is certainly one in which employers are struggling with their bottom lines in a lot of cases and trying to figure out how to make it work. It certainly hasn't been the best in terms of sales or all across the country. So this is a challenge. But this war on talent, I think one of the things that you brought up that is critical is they're not looking at the turnover ratio. They're not looking at that. They're just looking at what's it going to cost me today. Today to bring a person in. Today to hire somebody. And not necessarily how to keep somebody for the long haul.
Well, I think that one of the things we've seen with today's environment and the economic challenges it's brought to the fore is that many of these companies out there have had a knee-jerk reaction where they're focused on short-term solutions and they're cutting into the bone, if you will, and that over the long term is not going to pay good dividends. In fact, I think it foresees some pretty ominous long-term outcomes. I actually do a lot of keynote presentations, and I use an image of a farmer that is making a decision to plant seeds in his hand for future crops and future income, and yet he decides that he's going to actually just eat the seeds and feed the seeds to his family. That might be working in the short term, but it's not going to work in the long term. And I think that a lot of the drivers of engagement are not being invested in the way that they should be. Learning and development. A lot of these companies have cut research programs. They've cut learning opportunities. Well, again, going back to the don't use a one-size-all-fits solution, if you look at the drivers of engagement of men versus women, women prize learning opportunities much more than men do. So if you're not funding those opportunities, you're going to lose people, and that will cost you over the long haul.
You also mentioned in the first segment, we talked a little about diversity. And in your book, Building a Magnetic Culture, I believe it's chapter 6, it says, do not ignore diversity. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, I had a very unique experience growing up in that when I was 9 years old, my mom actually had a medical issue and made a decision to leave us home alone. And there were four kids in our house, the oldest being 12, and this is long before the movie Home Alone came out. And fortunately, my father had found out that we were left home alone, and he actually came down to the Chicago area where we lived, and he on the advice of a Chicago police officer, actually kidnapped us. So he was a wanted man in the state of Illinois. And it's not like my mother was off in Las Vegas gambling or whatever. She had a medical issue and just had some, I think, poor judgment at the time. And in the end, my dad pretty much saved my life by kidnapping us. But he brought us up to a American Indian reservation in northern Wisconsin. So I had the unique experience of being thrown into a tribal school of Chippewa Indians. And as a white male, it was extremely unique to be a minority and experience what it was like to be discriminated against simply based upon the color of my skin. And there wasn't a day that went by when I went to that tribal school for 2.5 years that I wasn't punched, kicked, spit on. I literally deliberately flunked my seventh grade math class so that I didn't have to go outside because recess was a guaranteed whooping. And that made me acutely aware of what it's like to be a minority and very sensitive to issues of diversity and inclusion. And what was really interesting is when I graduated from that grade school, we went into the largest geographic district, a high school district in the state of Wisconsin. And sadly, I watched a lot of my Native American classmates from grade school drop out during the first 2 weeks of school simply because they couldn't assimilate or feel included. And so that has made me a huge proponent of diversity and inclusion. And we know definitively that without diversity and inclusion efforts, you cannot build a magnetic culture or true employee engagement. There is a direct correlation. And there's been no greater moment in history where diversity presents challenges as it relates to employee engagement. And I'm not just talking about ethnic or cultural diversity, but especially generational diversity. There are a lot of baby boomer managers that are pulling their hair out trying to understand how to effectively manage millennial employees who are the younger workers. And as an example, the benchmark for recognition, which is the number one driver of engagement for baby boomers, back in their day, if they were recognized, you know, once a month by their manager, they would have been doing a jig or, you know, really thrilled. And what they have a hard time relating to is millennials, on average, want to be recognized seven times each day. And it's not that we're pointing fingers or prejudging people. That's just the reality of how they grew up with helicopter parents, and maybe they were on a soccer team that went 0-21, and yet everybody still got a trophy. There are companies in America that actually make 13th place ribbons, for example. Now, being 52 years old and a baby boomer myself, if somebody had given me a 13th place ribbon, I probably would have hit it under my bed. I certainly wouldn't have put it up on a wall. So the smart companies that are hoping to build a magnetic culture are taking the time to tailor their approach towards the diversity of their workforce. So understanding each constituent that makes up their workforce, whether it's men versus women, the drivers of engagement are very different. Women, for example, tend to prize learning and development opportunities much more than men. And so the smart companies will not use a one-size-fits-all solution to building a magnetic culture. They'll actually first examine the makeup of their workforce and then tailor the prescription, if you will, accordingly for each constituent.
When you're talking about diversity, you're not just talking about, obviously, gender, or you're not just talking about race. You're talking about everything as a whole. Do you see any gains in the last 10, 15 years in terms of what you're seeing in the workplace at all?
I do. I think that companies have, not too quickly, but not too slowly, they have recognized the importance of investing in programs which are teaching people about diversity, acceptance, and inclusions. And I think a large reason that that's changing for the better is just the societal and the demographic changes that are happening in America. We've never had more of a rainbow population, and the trend is in that direction as well. And I think it is, in some cases, forcing corporations to recognize that this is not going to go away, and it's better to be ahead of the curve and manage it accordingly than try to catch up.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking with Kevin Sheridan. He's the best-selling author, and we've talked about, Kevin, one of your books already. We're going to talk about the other one now, if that's okay. So the first one, of course, was Building a Magnetic Culture, and that's a New York Times bestseller. But let's talk about your previous book, The Virtual Manager. Tell me about it.
Well, actually, I had the pleasure of working with an individual in my marketing department at HR Solutions who fielded a call from Career Press, and they said, what does Mr. Sheridan know about how to manage people that you can't see? And, of course, like any good marketer, she said, he's the bomb. Truth be told, I knew very little about that topic prior to writing the book, which actually made it a lot more fun to write because I was learning a lot. We did a lot of research, and it was, I think, the third book to come out on the topic. And it's a big, big trend that people are allowing their workers to work from home, those jobs that are transportable or open to what used to be called telecommuting. It's a trend that needs to be managed, and it kind of flies in the face of the recent comments of Yahoo CEO Marissa Myers, who for years that company culture allowed people to work from home, and she came out with an internal corporate memo banning work from home. A similar decision was made by Best Buy, who for years was touted as a great employer because they allowed what's called a results-only work environment at corporate where people could float in and out. There were no set hours, and all they cared about were outcomes. I am a firm believer that there should be workplace flexibility in cases where the job is doable, from afar or remotely, it makes sense for both the employer and the employee. There are a whole host of benefits, not the least of which is trying to recruit top talent. Millennials prize workplace flexibility. They do not want to be told, you need to be here at 8 o'clock and you cannot leave until 5. There are stresses of the commute which are eliminated by letting people work remotely. The high gas prices. For the employer, real estate costs. You know, I used to spend as a company owner almost $100,000 a year on real estate, and truth be told, David, it clouded my judgment. I used to be that manager that said, we all need to be here, and how are we going to build a culture if we're not all here? And I finally realized that that was foolish. I should have been allowing for workplace flexibility, and I actually sent Marissa Meyer a copy of my book, and I just said, read chapter one, because the beginning of her memo said, in order to be a great place to work, well, wait a minute, 82% of the Fortune 100 best places to work have a working from home allowance. So it makes a lot of sense.
Do you think that this trend going away from virtual, which we've seen in the most recent examples you provided, is something that you think is going to, you know, pull back a little? Or do you think that this is just an aberration?
I think it's an aberration. Those two examples I gave are not the trend. In fact, I just read an article by the Harvard Business Review where they estimate worldwide by 2015, 40% of the worldwide working population, this is 1.3 billion people, will be virtual workers. This is not going away, and smart employers we'll need to accommodate that and make allowances for it. And, you know, at the end of the day, as long as you're getting the results that you expect out of your worker, why should you care what time they're showing up for work? And there are things that you can do during the recruiting process to make sure that you are hiring people that will be successful virtual workers. And oftentimes these old school managers that are hung up on, we all need to be here, and frankly not trusting, then they probably made the wrong hiring decision. If you're not able to trust someone you hire and you're having to check in on them and check up on them if they're working remotely and you have that little bird in the back of your head that's saying, I know she's at the mall or, you know, she's on a golf course, you know, golfing, she's not working, then frankly, you made the wrong hire, and you need to, as I say in the book, you know, let it go, or maybe you're not a virtual manager. You can't be because of your old school way of thinking.
How do you create a culture in a virtual environment? I think that's one of the challenges that certainly they talked about. How do you, because there is a difference when people work with people every day, when they are around one another every day. There is a, you get a sense of the feel of the person. You get a sense of, you know kind of what to say, what their body language talks about. You know, any good communication experts would say that, you know, when you're communicating just through email or just through phone, you do not get a full feel for that person. We know that because you can't read their body language, and body language is huge whenever you're talking about trying to figure out an individual. So how do you take the challenge of having less areas of communication between people and thus creating still a strong culture?
Well, I think rather than throwing in the towel on communication, you should recognize that it's a big area for improvement. We did a study showing that there's a direct correlation between great company communication and employee engagement. And the biggest fall down, if you will, as it relates to communication is supervisory communication. If you ask employees in a survey, and these were two of my favorite questions, where do you prefer to get your information? And you give them a choice of, I'd like to get an email, I'd like to read it in the company newsletter, I'd like to hear it from my coworker, I'd like to hear it from my boss. 55% of the working population will say, I want to get the news directly from my boss. If you ask them the second question, where are you currently getting your information? Is boss number one? Nope. Boss comes in at only 35% of the population. So there's a 20-point gap. And unfortunately, the number one place where they're actually getting their information is their coworker, i.e. the grapevine. That's the last place you want employees getting their information. So I think back to that wonderful scene in the great Paul Newman movie, Cool Hand Luke, where the sheriff is up on the hill and the chain gang is sweating, you know, digging the ditch. And he said, what we have here is a failure to communicate. And nothing has been more true in the corporate work environment. By the way, those best-in-class customers of ours, the ones achieving the highest level of engagement, they were always above the norm on communication. They took it really, really seriously, and it was a core part of their culture. The other thing that I'm listening to you, David, that I think is missed, and it's so badly needed, is fun. If you look at most key driver analyses or most surveys that are measuring engagement, they don't ask about fun. And so it's never seen as a key driver of engagement because it's not asked about. We know that the best-in-class companies out there are recognizing that we're all spending so much time at work. Why aren't we having more fun? And I cite in my Magnetic Culture book a fascinating statistic that takes a look at the number of laughs that you have over your lifetime. And the average five-year-old laughs 111 times a day, which I think is beautiful. The average person that's 44 years and up is only laughing 11 times each day. And to me, something is wrong with that. We need to build more levity and fun in the workplace.
No, and we're having fun here today on the HR Power Hour. You know, it's funny, we have a mutual friend who actually put us in contact together in terms of you being on the show and so forth, and that is Don McPherson of Modern Survey. Do you two work together a lot? He's been a guest on this show, and I just wanted to take a minute and see if you guys have worked together in terms of in the past.
Yeah, I've actually not worked directly with Don, but I'm aware of his work. I met him several years ago at a HR technology convention and have the utmost respect for his firm. He does, of course, employee engagement surveys, and he's got a lot of great technology that helps people not only measure accurately the pulse, if you will, of their employee engagement, but also do something with it. So I have the utmost respect for him. He does a lot of great work at Modern Survey.
Well, I want to certainly give him some credit for putting us together, so I think that's important. And as we all talk about networking being the key for business, the key for finding a job, the key for actually everything. When you're talking about it, it's certainly who you know in the workplace today, and certainly who you know in terms of making sure that you're happy at a job and staying at a job. That's just how it is. So you have two books on the market today. Obviously doing very well. Is there another book coming?
You know, I have a list of possibilities regarding my third book. Interestingly enough, I think these books have opened up a whole new career for me. I'm doing a lot of public speaking worldwide, which I'm passionate about. I love teaching people about building a magnetic culture and how to manage people that you can't see or virtual workers. So I was asked to write two books in 1 year, and because of that, David, I really need to take a breather on the book front, but I do foresee that I will at some point write a third book and maybe more down the road, and I just have to figure out what the topic is. I certainly don't want to write an also ran, you know, management book that is basically offering no new insight that's revolutionary. So I'm excited about the speaking future as well as the writing future.
So where are some of the upcoming events people might be able to see you, since obviously we're here at the end of July?
I have on my website, I have a calendar of the events. I'll be doing a keynote speech at the Dallas Benefits Show on July 15th in Dallas. I'll actually, in early November, be in Istanbul, Turkey, doing a keynote presentation for a large HR conference over there. I also offer to do multiple SHRM chapters throughout the United States, as well as ASTD chapters, where I come in with a sponsor and give away free copies of my book because the sponsor covers that cost, and those have gone really well.
You are listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com. And we're having a great time talking today with Kevin Sheridan, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and has two great books. But the current one, the most recent one out there, is the New York Times bestseller, and is called Building a Magnetic Culture. So congratulations, Kevin, on the New York bestseller list. That's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Hey, you know, we've been talking this whole time, this whole segment, a whole hour, I should say, on employee engagement. And you talked about the top three things that really drive an employee in engagement. The third one you talked about is the person's manager, the person's supervisor. Tell me how this all plays together. Tell me how valuable they are. I mean, it seems obvious to me, but I mean, maybe to others it isn't as clear as to what they can do to drive that person forward.
Well, there's a lot of truth to the old adage that many of your listeners, I'm sure, have heard, which is people don't leave companies, they leave managers. And there's a ton of truth to that. And indeed, if you look at the top three drivers, even though the manager is listed as number three, if you look close enough, it's really all three meld into one. Who, after all, should be responsible for thanking employees for a job well done or recognizing them? It's the immediate manager. Who should be having that sit-down conversation that I made reference to about one's career development? It's the manager. Who should genuinely care And this is something that I think is it's not done as frequently as it should, and I've seen great leaders use it quite effectively, is it's not all about the work. If you're leading someone and you're their immediate manager, get personal. Get professionally personal. Find out what they like to do outside of work. Take an interest in how many kids they have and where the kids go to college. It matters. People notice. And when you have that caring type of nature and you're asking questions that show that you care and you're interested in helping the employee develop themselves, it makes a world of difference. Now, on the flip side of those special leaders and managers that have that, there's the opposite. There are managers that are literally screaming at employees and treating them unfairly, which is why, as pedestrian as it sounds, I had to put the golden rule in my book. I had to put that golden rule that each parent tries to teach their kid, which is, you know, treat people the way that you'd want to be treated. It may sound basic, but it needed to be said.
You know, it's so true, isn't it? At the end of the day, some of the things we've heard that, you know, just go back to our childhood are time-tested and true. And they work in the workplace, they work in life. And, you know, sometimes, even though we're talking about millennials, even though we're talking about different generations, they span all generations. They're just so factually true. And sometimes, I guess, one of the advantages that maybe us older generations has is we have the time of experience to know that. And that, you know, that's the great thing that I talk about from a generational standpoint is baby boomers have experience. Gen Y has technological experience. And the combination of the two makes for a great team.
Absolutely.
Kevin, if we're talking about how somebody can reach you, tell me about your website. Tell me about how people can connect with you. Give them a phone number. Let's give it all.
Sounds fantastic. My website is actually www.kevinsheridanllc.com. My email is kevin@kevinsheridanllc.com. Phone number is 847-386-7486. And for those listeners that would like a personally signed and discounted copy of either of my books, the two book websites are www.buildingamagneticculture.com and www.thevirtualmanagerbook.com.
No, that's fabulous. And certainly anybody listening to the show today can go to the HR Power Hour after this show. Kevin's information, bio, and connections will all be listed on the HR Power Hour site, and you can download and connect directly to him there. Kevin, thank you very much for being on the show today. Truly appreciate you as a guest, and certainly hope that we will again be able to talk in the future.
My pleasure, David. Thanks so much. It was fun.
So now here's your HR tip of the week. So I was speaking with one of my colleagues, and she was recently in a job search and talking about the challenges of networking. And she said she had four thoughts in terms of when you're out there trying to network when you're looking for a job. And here's her thought. One, yes, you feel like a used car salesman. Two, yes, you are the used car. Three, yes, a lot of times you feel like you need a shower when you get home. Four, yes, it is a necessary evil. Interesting take. There may be some merit behind it, but the bottom line is you must network to be successful in your job search career. And that's your HR tip of the week. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.